Who has the flu? I hope not you.
Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, January 14th. Well, I'm knocking on wood because when I was flying home from my vacation last week, the woman sitting next to me on the plane was coughing and complaining of chills and aches and pains. But so far, so good. I did get a flu shot last fall, and I'm wondering if that's going to be enough to escape what is turning out to be a bad year for the flu. It's good to be back, by the way, even if it means adjusting to some chillier temperatures, and I hope you will join in this hour as we talk about a particularly nasty flu season in Wisconsin and around the nation. We have already had more than double the number of flu cases in the state than we had during the entire flu season last year, and nearly four times the number of flu-related hospitalizations. So did you get a flu shot? Has it protected you so far? If you haven't gotten a flu shot, are you planning to now? Let us know, and we'll welcome your questions about the flu for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Tom Haupt. He is the Influenza Surveillance Coordinator for the Wisconsin Division of Public Health. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for your invitation to come back on your show again.
Well, yeah.
I look forward to it.
Thanks very much for joining us again. So how bad is the flu season this year?
Well, we're having a significantly higher and more intense influenza season that we've seen in probably the last 4 to 5 years, excluding the influenza pandemic of 2009, of course. But this year, it's an influenza AH3 year, which historically is one of the more powerful type of viruses. And it's hitting every age group, but especially the elderly people, people over 65 most significantly. As you mentioned in your introduction, we've had somewhere around 1,360 hospitalizations due to influenza this year. And of all of last year, as a comparison, we had 395. So we're getting that. We had over 600 hospitalizations alone last week, and we continue to see an increase. So we are at a significantly higher and more intense season than we've seen in a while. However, we have seen these in the past. 2008 was a very bad year. Also, 2003 and 2004 was a significantly worse year because the influenza vaccine was not a very good match that year.
Well, why is the flu season so bad this year?
Well, again, it's historically the virus, the influenza AH3, causes more morbidity and more illness to all age groups, but primarily, and this is how it differs from the H1 virus, which caused the pandemic, an H3 virus will affect older people much more than it will younger people. We have had sporadic reports of schools closing this past year, but a significant increase in nursing home outbreaks. We're probably up to 60, 70 or more that are influenza-related in long-term care facilities, some of which have unfortunately resulted in resident fatalities.
Yeah, there have been a couple of deaths.
Yeah, at least a couple of deaths. We're trying to get a better handle on that to find out exactly how many deaths we've had over this past season so far. Really, deaths are not reportable to the influenza unless you're under 18 years old, but we are reaching out to our local health departments and to our long-term care facilities to really get a better handle as to what's happening in the nursing homes this year.
Yeah. Is the flu shot working well this year?
Well, on Friday, the CDC put out some preliminary estimates on vaccine efficacy, and they found that it was 62% effective in preventing medically attended acute respiratory illness. And that's about what we normally would see with influenza vaccine. We're always hoping for that 60 to 70% range. Optimistically, you'd love to have 100%, but no vaccine in the world is 100% effective.
Mm-hmm.
But the preliminary results that came out last Friday did show that the vaccine is effective, and it's in that range where we're very happy with it. I was very concerned that it would be significantly lower, but the fact is, people are much more attuned to vaccine failures. I think a lot of this had to do with the fact that what we went through in the 2009 pandemic.
So why would a flu vaccine be only 60 to 70% effective?
Well, it all depends on the host response as well. Obviously, older people do not get the response and do not get the antibodies that a normal, healthy young adult would. However, there are cases that I know of where a normal, healthy adult, again, does come down with influenza infection. But we have to remember, too, the purpose of influenza vaccine. Yes, it's primarily people look at it as a prevention of influenza, but the main goal of influenza vaccine is to keep people out of the hospitals, keep them away from pneumonia, keep people alive. And as somebody who had perhaps come down with just a minor case of influenza, that could be looked at in different ways, even if they did have the vaccine. If they had the vaccine and they came down with mild illness, people could say it's a vaccine failure. However, if it lowered the symptoms, which it probably did, it could be a vaccine success.
And it is not too late to get a vaccine?
It is not too late to get a vaccine at this particular point. We have heard that nationwide that people are really starting to take the influenza season very seriously, and I don't know of any major shortages at this point of vaccine. However, it's something that our immunization program is monitoring very closely. But at this point, there's still enough to go around.
And to those who still are hesitant to have a flu vaccine because they think the flu vaccine will make them sick, what do you say?
Well, influenza vaccine, especially the one that's given by injection, is a dead virus. It's something that cannot possibly give you influenza illness. The live attenuated vaccine, that's the nasal spray, very, very seldom does it ever result in illness. We had had like one or two cases a year where a child may have got it and spread it to a sibling. But again, the influenza vaccine is extremely safe. The shot itself, it's impossible to cause influenza illness.
So what do you think? I was exposed, I think, to someone with the flu. I'm not positive, but that woman next to me on the plane, she was more than just a cough, but she's complaining of aches and pains and chills. And I was very, very happy to hear that sitting right next to her in a crowded plane. But I no symptoms so far, and it's been about 3 or 4 days.
Okay, I think you're going to be luck out on this one. And again, this might be an indication of an influenza vaccine success story.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. We do have to remember, too, there are several other viruses going around these days that can mimic influenza. And I'm hoping that, again, that you stay healthy on this. But for flu-wise, I think you're going to be all right with this. I think the vaccine has worked well for you.
We are talking about the flu and a particularly tough flu season in Wisconsin and in other parts of the nation as well. And we're welcoming your questions for our guest, Tom Haupt, Influenza Surveillance Coordinator for the Wisconsin Division of Public Health. Have you had the flu already this season? Was it a bad one? Or did you get a flu shot? Are you going to get a flu shot? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to be partly cloudy with some areas of light snow. Highs today will be in the teens and low 20s. Tonight, clear, very cold, lows in the single digits. And tomorrow, a mostly sunny day with highs in the mid to upper 20s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, it's our State Capitol Report after 7 o'clock. Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter Sean Johnson will be in to bring us up to date on all the happenings from under the state capitol dome. After 7:30, we'll also talk about a possible income tax cut with the president of the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance. And as you heard, the governor will be delivering his State of the State address tomorrow night. We will be carrying that live on Wisconsin Public Radio at 7 o'clock. And we'll be talking about the state of the state from a wide variety of perspectives all morning long on Wednesday morning. Right now, we are talking about the flu season. Experts are saying this year's flu season could be the worst in many years, at least a few years. We are talking with an influenza tracking expert from the state's public health division to find out why the flu is so bad this year, and we'll talk more about what you can do to protect yourself, and we welcome your questions, too, and your experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Tom Haupt is our guest. He is the Influenza Surveillance Coordinator for the Wisconsin Division of Public Health. And what are the symptoms that we should be looking for, Tom?
Well, typical influenza has a very abrupt onset of illness. You can go to work in the morning feeling good and leave by 4 o'clock in the afternoon feeling that you're on death's door. The majority of symptoms are high fever, which usually goes over 101 degrees, severe body aches where your entire body and your joints and your muscles hurt, coughing, sore throat. Some people, very small number of people, might get the diarrhea with it, but that's not a significant sign of influenza. But what we're seeing lately in some of our local surveillances, especially in Dane County, is an increase in acute respiratory illness with fevers and with the muscle aches.
Mm-hmm. And would the treatment for this is just stay in bed?
Stay in bed, a lot of fluids, give yourself time to heal. In worst-case scenarios, if you see a physician and within 48 hours they can prescribe an antiviral medication, usually it's Tamiflu. The other medication is Relenza. That's the one that's inhaled. Tamiflu is a capsule. And that can actually reduce the symptoms by up to 24 hours. But again, that has to be given within 48 hours after your onset of illness. And unfortunately, some people don't go to the doctor during that time period. And by the time they do get to their clinician, they're beyond that particular window.
Yeah. And I saw a national news story last night that said that sometimes people were being told, well, tough it out, even if they did make it within 48 hours, because Tamiflu is something that they don't want to run out of.
That's exactly right. And again, we've had sporadic reports from hospitals and clinicians throughout Wisconsin of not necessarily a shortage, but a distribution problem, because the distributors only have so much Tamiflu at the beginning of the year. They can't really send that back to the manufacturers. But what we've done is gone through the Pharmacy Society to work with the distributors to increase their local stockpile of Tamiflu. But it's something we're watching very closely. In addition to trying to determine if there's any vaccine shortage, we want to be sure that we're monitoring any potential Tamiflu shortage or distribution problems.
Mm-hmm. And again, Tamiflu just lessens the symptoms. It doesn't take them away.
Yeah, it does. It's not like an antibiotic. It's just something where the symptomology will be reduced by up to 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But it is potentially a life-saving drug for those people who are of underlying illness and those people who are older.
Well, let's take some calls. Wayne in Hartford is with us. Hello, Wayne.
Good morning. Welcome back, Joy.
Thank you, Wayne.
Question I have is I've gotten a flu shot, and I would consider myself a flu shot success. However, the last 3 or 4 days, I've been achy, and you know, I've got like what I would call mild flu things going on in me. And my question is I've had the flu shot. Can I still be contagious to other people if I'm actually fighting it off?
Well, that's a good question, Wayne. Thank you. And I'm glad it's just, not glad that you have illness, but I'm glad it's not a serious illness that you have. But potentially when you're dealing with respiratory viral infections, you're infectious for up to about 5 days after your onset of illness. So if you said 3 or 4 days, you're potentially infectious for another day or so. After that 5th day, the amount of virus that you have within your body decreases significantly, and it's harder to spread that to another person. But the big thing is to keep up with a good hygiene, coughing into your sleeve, washing your hands. But based on what the symptoms that you're telling me, you potentially could be infectious for at least another day or two.
Well, good luck, Wayne. I hope it's not the full-fledged flu for you.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot. That was one good thing. The woman next to me on the plane was coughing into her elbow. So I do have to get into the habit of doing that myself. What is the, even if you're not sick, constant hand washing is advised, isn't it?
Absolutely. And always cough etiquette is 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's just a little tickle in your throat or for whatever reason you have a dry cough, just common sense and courtesy to the people around you would be to cough into your sleeve. Too many people think that, oh, I'm not contagious. Wayne's question was excellent, by the way. And there's too many people who say, I have allergies or I'm not contagious, but then they're coughing into people's faces. It's really something where we have to do a much better job with our cough etiquette and with our personal hygiene.
Yeah, let's take another call, this one from Irene in Monona. Good morning, Irene.
Hi.
Sounds like you've got something going on.
Yeah, I was on a plane 3 weeks ago. I don't have the flu to any of our, I haven't had a fever. But one of the things I did hear on, I can't remember which, it was a reputable show, take, and this is what I did do, take some disinfectant wipes with you in a little baggie, because the air vents up above and parts of the tray are actually worse than going into the bathroom on some planes.
Oh.
Just because, you know, those little twisty air vents and the light switch, they just don't get washed properly.
I bet. And so you wiped those off, but it didn't help, Irene.
I don't have the flu, but
yeah.
Can you tell me also what places in town, if your clinic has run out of vaccinations, what kind of places, where can people get vaccinations in town?
Well, there's a flu tracker on our website. That's the Department of Health Services website. Most places, as I said, have not run out of vaccine yet. I believe the Walgreens stores still have it. Hopefully you've already contacted, people have already contacted their own personal clinicians on this. But as of now, there's not a shortage, although it's something that we're monitoring very, very closely. With the increased media coverage, that's something that could actually be happening very shortly. But Irene, I hope wish you well. Hope you get well very soon.
Yeah, well, thanks.
Yeah, get well, Irene. What about those disinfectant wipes? Is that a nice thing to carry around in your purse or pocket?
Yeah, a lot of people do carry those around, and you're seeing them more and more at grocery stores for the carts, the shopping carts. It's really not a bad idea to do that type of thing. And also carrying around a little bottle of hand gel. Myself, my wife, we both carry one around, and we have one in each of our cars to make sure that we try to keep our hygiene up as best we can.
Do you think, Tom, that those, I don't know, things like zinc tablets and that kind of thing help at all if you start getting a sore throat?
Well, zinc tablets have been proven to have an effect on the common cold. Now, influenza, not so much. But zinc is also a good vitamin to have, and I would never discourage people from taking a vitamin supplement, especially during the winter season when their immune system might be a little bit lower.
Mm-hmm.
But zinc has been proven to stop or at least somewhat prevent the common cold, but again, not influenza.
Also, though, was reading that besides getting a flu shot, one of the best things you can do is just get enough sleep and eat well and just have a healthy lifestyle.
That's exactly right. And, you know, getting a good night's sleep, there's nothing better than that in the world. And the first thing I ask my wife every morning is how she slept, and she asked me the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really very, very important to get a good night's sleep and to keep up with on your fluids. If you're starting to feel sick, that too, stay away from alcohol for a while. You know, drink the juices, the clear juices, and just give yourself time to heal.
Yeah. That's what I am glad that I'm not sick, because I was at an all-inclusive in Mexico where there's a lot of food and drink and not a lot of sleep. So
right.
Yeah, but I'm feeling fine.
Good.
Bob in Fifield is with us. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you feeling? I hope you're feeling okay.
Yeah. Yes, I am. I'm actually I just called because I'm a senior. I'm 65 years old, and I've had the flu shot, but I was wondering if you get the flu, could you get pneumonia? And I also was wondering if seniors should get the pneumonia vaccine, because normally it's covered by Medicare if you're 65 or older.
That's a very good question. And influenza, one of the complications of influenza is pneumonia. And unfortunately, we've seen many a case in older people, especially this current season. So definitely it could lead into pneumonia, and unfortunately it can lead into death as well. But that's the purpose of the vaccine, is to really prevent the pneumonia, prevent hospitalizations, prevent death. Now, the pneumonia vaccine, the pneumococcal vaccine, is, again, something that's recommended for over 50 years old, I believe it is, and I strongly recommend people to get it. Now, is it really a pneumonia vaccine? It prevents a particular form of strep pneumoniae, which pneumonia is where the people get a little bit confused. It can cause pneumonia, but strep pneumoniae, for the most part, causes invasive blood disorders, especially with older people and people who have underlying illness, and that can lead to hospitalization and death as well. But I would strongly encourage people over 50 years old to get the pneumococcal vaccine.
And you mentioned that most of the hospitalizations in Wisconsin are the elderly.
That's correct. As of, I was trying to run some statistics through Sunday, and for whatever reason, my system doesn't wake up until after 6 o'clock in the morning. But as of Friday, 65% of our 1,360 cases have been over 65 years old. And if I broke that down even farther, which I didn't have a chance to do, there would be a very high percentage of those over 75 and 80 years old as well. We have a lot of people hospitalized in their 80s and 90s.
How do you know if your flu is bad enough to require hospitalization? When should you see a doctor if you've already gone past that 48-hour period?
Well, one of the issues is, do you have any underlying illnesses, anything that might lower your immune system, any medications that might lower your immune system? I, for example, and I'm not embarrassed to say this, I have a form of arthritis where I take a shot called Humira, which lowers my immune system. So if I come down with symptoms that are consistent with influenza, I'm going to see my doctor. Hopefully he can get that Tamiflu prescription within that 48 hours. But certainly any kind of acute respiratory illness where people are having a significantly difficult time breathing, or if it's a cough that has very purulent sputum, they need to talk to their doctors, at least go through the triage system and talk to a nurse, and that they will make that decision whether or not they should come in to see the clinic. But if they do come into the clinic, all I always want to tell people, if you're coughing, they have masks available. Put it on before you start spreading it to somebody else.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Tom Haupt, who is Influenza Surveillance Coordinator for the Wisconsin Division of Public Health. We're talking about particularly severe flu season in Wisconsin, and we're welcoming your questions for him, all things flu-related. And we're wondering, did you get a flu shot, and has it protected you so far? If you haven't gotten a flu shot, are you planning to? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news and then we'll take more of your calls and questions. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin has already had more than double the number of flu cases than we had during the entire flu season last year, and nearly four times the number of flu-related hospitalizations. We're discussing why this flu season is so bad and what we can do to protect ourselves, and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's coming up now on 6:37 on this Monday, January 14th, talking with Tom Haupt, who is the Influenza Surveillance Coordinator for the Wisconsin Division of Public Health. And on Facebook, Sue asks, I have had many of the flu symptoms described, but no fever. Do you think this is still the flu? Could it still be the flu without a fever, Tom?
Absolutely. There are some people who do not get a fever when they have influenza. Also, it's not uncommon for people to really misconstrue what a fever is. We've all grown up with that idea that it has to be over 98.6 degrees, but in reality, a fever is anything above your normal baseline. For example, my normal baseline is more like 97.4. So if I have a 98.6, I have at least a mild fever going on at that point. But there are a small percentage of people that will not get a fever with influenza. But if their signs and symptoms are consistent otherwise, it's a good chance that it probably is.
All right, Sue. So what does Sue do now?
Well, again, without knowing her signs and symptoms and what's underlying, if she's within that 48-hour period and sounds like she's afebrile, so she's probably not that sick. But if she does have underlying illness and it's within that 48-hour period, I would certainly give my clinician a call and find out if I need to come in and see you and or if I can get a Tamiflu prescription over the phone.
Mm-hmm. We go next to Margot in Madison. Hi, Margot.
Hi.
Yes.
Well, I'm calling about the question about reinfection. You know, we sometimes hear people say, throw away your toothbrush after you've been sick. And that raises the issue of, can you actually get sick again with the same bug? Do you not develop immunities from that sickness? What is going on? That's one of my questions. And the other one is, would there be any discussion of the norovirus, which is also pretty widespread?
Sure. Well, those are both very good questions, Margot. I appreciate the calling in on that. As far as influenza and getting a reinfection with it, once you've had an influenza illness this year, for example, if you have influenza A, you may not get that particular strain, but there's three different strains that are out there right now. There's two influenza A's and one B. So as far as getting rid of your toothbrush, that's probably not a bad idea, because you can potentially, you won't be reinfecting yourself, but the toothbrush that you have, because it went into your mouth, obviously could be very contaminated. But always remember, there's three different strains of influenza going around. You can actually come down with it more than once in a year. Your question about norovirus. Norovirus is often called the stomach flu. It's very common at this time of year. It's something that, again, is hitting nursing homes and elderly very hard. And norovirus in itself is like 24 hours of being miserable with either vomiting or diarrhea. Usually it's self-limiting, except, again, it can cause some dehydration and some other complications in elderly people. And there are different strains of norovirus as well, so you can get reinfected with norovirus more than once, and you can reinfect yourself.
Thank you, Margot, for the call. So if there are three different strains, the flu shot that I got last fall is protecting me against all three or just one of them?
It's protecting against all three. Every year there's two influenza A's, an H3, an H1, and an influenza B. Now, in the 2012-13 season, mm-hmm. in the 2013-14 season, at the end of this year, there will be four viruses in there. There'll be two influenza B's and two influenza A's. So you'll be hopefully protected from four strains of virus come next year.
Yeah. And that's the way this works, is that you're developing this vaccine, or the experts are developing this vaccine now for next year?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. It's January, but 12th or 13th, mm-hmm. whatever the date is, I'm sorry, 14th actually. Another month and a half, they're going to be meeting in Geneva, Switzerland, the CDC, and many of the experts from around the world to determine what that vaccine component will be for the 13-14 year.
Jackie in Drummond is with us now with a question about the vaccine. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, I'm going to be the devil's advocate. I don't know if you read the Star Tribune yesterday, but there are a couple of quotes from Dr. Edward Ellinger, who's the health commissioner, and then Dr. Osterholm, who we all know. And Dr. Ellinger said the flu vaccine has never been one of the star performers. Mm-hmm. Then Michael Osterholm is even more blunt, calling the flu vaccine over-promoted and over-hyped. And my son and I had a discussion about this exact same thing, you know, the day before this was in the paper. And I've always gotten the impression, too, that it's probably somewhat necessary, but this one is not, they're not effective. And the pharmacy, I'd like you to address how much money the pharmacies make off this, because it's just hype, hype, hype every year. To me, it's kind of like the military-industrial complex of medicine. And I'm 72. I've had two shots in 72 years and never have been sick. So I think there is somewhat of a hype, and Osterholm said we need at least $1 billion to develop a better way of protecting, you know, the old and the elderly. And the old and the elderly are subject to pneumonias, you know, all the time, you know, injections or not. This is kind of what takes their lives at the end of their life when, you know, they're older and their immune system is not working. So,
Jackie, let me jump in. All right, so is Tom the flu shot over promoted, over hyped?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I understand what Mike Osterholm is saying, and what he's saying is exactly right. We do need to get a better vaccine. We do get better coverage with the live attenuated vaccine, and again, that's the mist that goes up the nose. It is more effective than the shot, but again, once you're over 50 years old, you can't get the nasal vaccine. He is exactly right by saying we need to get better vaccines in the future. Saying it's overhyped, I don't agree with that. Again, the fact that we're seeing 62% efficacy against medically needed influenza, it's a lot better than having zero vaccine, not zero efficacy. I would strongly recommend that people would continue to consider and get the flu shot. I know Dr. Osterholm has also said, too, his purpose is not to sway people away from the flu shot. He is just basically pointing out what the facts are. But again, bottom line is people should get vaccinated. Now, as far as what the vaccine companies get for this, influenza is not a very productive type of vaccine. They do not make a lot of money out of it. There's only like four places that make the vaccine. So it's not a real popular one. It's not a moneymaker for them by any stretch of the imagination. But again, we have to be real careful of saying what Dr. Osterholm is saying. And it's 100% correct. We do need better vaccines, but what we've got still has efficacy, and people should be getting it.
Yeah. So how do you respond to Jackie's thought that most elderly people die of something like pneumonia anyway?
Well, again, it's not necessarily influenza. I'll give you a perfect example. My parents both died of pneumonia 3 years ago. They died of a virus called human metapneumovirus, which comes up traditionally right after influenza season and is just as deadly as influenza could be, obviously by personal experience. So yes, elderly people do die from pneumonias, but they're not all necessarily influenza. There's many viruses. RSV, which is very much a childhood disease, has also hit the older people very hard.
Yeah, we talked in our first half hour that some people don't get the flu shot because they think it might give them the flu. Is there any other myth or misconception that you'd like to address regarding the flu shot? Why are there so many people that don't get it?
Well, obviously some people don't want to pay the money for it, but again, most insurances will cover this. That's not an issue. Some, as you mentioned several times, people think they get the influenza shot and they come down with it, where in fact they are probably coming down with one of the other numerous respiratory viruses that are circulating throughout the state. I'm not sure why. I mean, even our Division of Public Health, there's people who don't get, even our communicable disease section, who don't get the influenza vaccine on a yearly basis. And it's hard for me to understand that. To me, any protection you can get from a potentially deadly disease like influenza is something that should be pursued.
Mm-hmm. And the recommendation is not just the elderly should get this, everyone should get this?
Everyone mm-hmm. over 6 months of age should be getting the influenza vaccine. It's a universal recommendation that's about 3 years in the running from the CDC and from the World Health Organization. So we, again, strongly encourage it, and it's not too late at this particular point to get the influenza vaccine. Even if you had influenza, again, potentially you could come down with a different strain even this year.
Next, we go to John in Port Wing. Hi, John.
Yes. I'm 92 years old, and my wife is 90. And I got an appointment on 22nd, and I'm taking three medications, for heart, lovastatin, captopril, and metoprolol. Mm-hmm. Now, do I should call today and say, Doc, you better give me a shot now, or I should wait till Tuesday?
I would call today and say, hey, the influenza season is at or near its peak. Do you still have vaccine? If you do, get me in and get me a shot. I think that would be the best thing for you, John, and for your wife. Okay. And always have to remember, too, you bring up a very good point. You get the influenza vaccine not only for yourself, but it's for the people who are around you. If you're older, in this case, where you have an older wife, or if you have younger children, grandchildren who are maybe less than 1 year old, they don't develop the immunity, and you're getting that vaccine not only for yourself, but for those people who are around you. You bring up a very good point, John. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, John, and good luck to you and your wife. Hope you can get that shot. Let's take one more call. Jay and Madge? Is that where you're from, Jay?
That's correct. Well pronounced.
I have not heard of Madge before. Where is that?
Well, it's northwest Wisconsin, about 9 miles south of Spooner, which might be a little more recognizable.
Yes, I'll have to check it out sometime. All right. So I understand you have the flu. I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, yes. I'm on the mend, apparently. I'm on the fifth day. But I will say this, that I've had flu shots for about 14 years because, I am 65 at this point, and I've been active in the community and substitute teaching and decided not to take chances. And for all that time, I've never suffered getting the flu once until this time. And I was really taken aback by it. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, it's the sickest I've ever been for 48 hours. It was unbelievable. So I guess I heard earlier, by an earlier caller, you did address the vaccine that was used this year, and so I have no questions about that. But I won't be going forward feeling as armor-clad as I have all my older life. It I was really disappointed, and like I say, it was a real setback to get this.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, and you're particularly upset maybe because you actually got the flu shot this year and ended up getting the flu for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, I wouldn't say upset so much as disappointed and a bit surprised. As I say, I felt it was sort of a surefire thing, but my doctor tells me that people with immune issues, which autoimmune issues, which I may have because I have relatively acute arthritis, might invite the infection regardless of having the vaccine or not.
Well, I'm glad you're on the mend, Jay. Thank you for calling. This can happen, Tom.
Absolutely. And in fact, and I can certainly understand Jay's disappointment with this, but looking at from the other aspect, it sounds like he was not hospitalized. And again, that could be a vaccine success story. The fact that this is such a powerful virus that we're dealing with this year, that it did give him enough immunity to keep him out of the hospital, and he's certainly alive and on the mend, and that's great. So really, this could be looked at as a vaccine success story as well. Although, when you're coming down with the symptoms and they're as miserable as what Jay is, it's hard to, it's certainly understandable how he's disappointed with this.
But the
fact that he's still alive and the fact that he wasn't hospitalized, that's the big thing, and that's one of the main purposes of the vaccine.
Well, Tom, any last words of wisdom for our listeners?
Just want to tell people that we're at or near peak activity. I believe we're probably still a week or so away from peak activity. Influenza vaccine still available if we haven't had it, or if you've had influenza. Again, there's three different strains out there. Not too late to get the vaccine. But if you do come down with it, think about the people around you. Make sure you use the good hygiene, cough etiquette. Give yourself time to heal. We'll get through this, I can guarantee you.
Thank you so much for being with us. Stay well.
Sure, thank you.
Tom Haupt, Influenza Surveillance Coordinator for the Wisconsin Division of Public Health. Quick check of our weather before our Monday morning wake-up call. It's going to be partly cloudy with some areas of light snow today. Highs will be in the teens and low 20s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's time for our Monday morning wake-up call, and today our guest lawmaker is issuing a wake-up call on drunken driving laws in Wisconsin. He says they need to be stricter. Our guest is Republican State Representative Jim Ott of Mequon. He, along with Republican State Senator Alberta Darling of River Hills, are planning to reintroduce a bill to toughen Wisconsin's drunken driving laws. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good to be with you.
Thanks again for being with us. So I know one thing you want to change is that you want to make the first-time drunken driving offense in Wisconsin for those who are super drunk or double the legal limit a crime. Right now it's just a civil forfeiture. Why do you want to make this change?
Well, first of all, we're introducing a series of six bills, and what you mentioned was one of them. And what we're trying to do is go after those offenders with very high blood alcohol content levels, in the case of first offense, 0.15 and above. And secondly, we want to go after the repeat offenders, the people who keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. And honestly, at 0.15, that's double the legal limit for intoxication while driving. And it's someone who is very impaired. These, you know, if you look at some of the most egregious accidents or crashes we have in Wisconsin, you'll find that BAC levels are generally over 0.15. We would continue to have first offense between 0.08 and 0.14 a civil forfeiture. So there'd be no change in the law for those first-time offenders who are 0.14 or below.
Yeah, so why not make it a crime for those as well?
Well, a couple of reasons. Number one, we want to get bills introduced that have a chance of passing. I don't think we could get a bill passed that would criminalize 0.08 and above. Secondly, we're looking for things that could have a serious deterrent effect. We're not trying to put more people in jail or have more people paying fines. We want less people driving drunk. The thing is with 0.08, you know, we oftentimes hear the argument, and I think it's a valid one, that not everyone who is arrested for drunken driving is an alcoholic. Sometimes you have people that they go out, they party, and maybe they have one or two drinks more than they should. I'm not saying one or two drinks, but one or two drinks more than they should. And maybe their BAC gets up to 0.08 or 0.09. They get stopped, they get arrested, they get convicted of first offense drunk driving, and it really does wake them up, and they say, hey, you know what, I got to change my behavior. the argument is, do you really want to put someone in that situation of having a criminal conviction on their record? Because maybe they're going to change and it'll never happen again. And I think it's a valid argument. So, again, we're going after the people with the high BACs, who I think are the biggest problem on the roads, and those who are repeat offenders.
Yeah, you want to make the third conviction a felony. Why?
Well, right now, third conviction is a misdemeanor, which means generally the jail sentences are less than a year. Making it a felony offense would say that the judges could sentence the person to more than a year in prison. And quite honestly, by the time the person does this the third time, they've driven drunk hundreds of times. And the treatment options, the sentences that they're given for first and second offense apparently are not having an impact. And this would get more of these people, I guess, to get them off the roads and deal more seriously what I think is a serious problem. You know, right here in southeastern Wisconsin, we had at least two crashes over the Christmas holidays where a drunk driver crossed the center line and hit an oncoming vehicle head-on, and a person in the other vehicle was killed, and a number of people were seriously injured. And there were some other crashes, at least one other crashes, where I hadn't seen the results yet, whether or not it was a drunk driver that was involved or not, with a head-on crash where a couple of people were killed. So, honestly, I think when we go out on the roads, we should have some guarantee that we're not going to have someone hit us head-on who happens to have been drinking to excess and is highly impaired.
What else would your series of bills do?
Well, one of them would require that anyone arrested for first-time OWI would have to make a personal appearance in court, whether it's a criminal offense or a civil forfeiture. Right now, some counties do require the offender to make an appearance in court, but other counties just allow the person to send their attorney. I would like to see that person stand before the judge and maybe have a little bit more of an idea of where they may be headed if they keep this behavior up. Again, the idea is deterrence to change behavior. Another bill would go back to the situation where judges could require the seizure of a vehicle upon third or subsequent offense. And a couple of glitches in our law that were pointed out to me in the last year for homicide while OWI and for causing injury while OWI, there are no mandatory minimum sentences. There are maximum sentences anywhere from 25 to 40 years for homicide while OWI, but no mandatory minimum sentences. So we would like to see a mandatory minimum for homicide OWI, looking at something like around 10 years. That's what the starting point is here. We'll see where that goes in the legislature. And for causing injury while OWI, the sentences would range from mandatory minimums from 6 months up to 3 years, depending upon the severity of the injury that was caused. We're introducing these all as individual bills. If there's something there that really causes a hang-up for people, it's not going to slow down the whole package. Yeah. Other bills may pass. So we're going to try to get all six passed, but anything that we can do, I think, would be heading us in the direction of deterrence. The other thing I should mention...
let me jump in, because we have just a minute to go, okay. Representative Ott. I know that similar attempts last session were unsuccessful, in part because this apparently would cost a lot of money. You dispute that.
I think, not all of these bills would cost a lot of money. To have the person appear in court upon first offense, there is no fiscal impact to the state, and not even to the person, because they're already sending their attorney, so they wouldn't have to pay more to show up in court. The making the third offense a felony, the fiscal estimate that came out from Department of Corrections, I think, was a major overestimate, because they took a steady state. They said, you know what, we're going to take the number of convictions we have now, move them forward as felonies, and therefore this is what the cost would be. The other thing I just want to mention quickly, Joy, is we realize this is a complicated issue. We're not going to solve it with laws, but I think it's a piece of the puzzle.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk more, I'm sure, as these bills move through the legislature. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.